final guideline came with the evolution of the DPE shareholder function. Because we were all admitted that between 2007 and now, the shape of the department has changed, and the shape of the SOC has changed. And also the role that the SOCs have to play into the economy has changed. So the new vision for the department and also our view of entrenching the SOC roles and contributing to the new economy influence us as well in terms of looking at whether the 2007 guidelines were still relevant. And we also had an issue in terms of market force potential to now this is it's the cut across the private sector versus the public sector available. And we looked at the role of the SOC in light of this massive infrastructure plan. How do you then attract suitable executives? How do you attract suitable project managers? How do you attract people who will be able to bring them and make sure that the SOCs achieve on their needs? When we looked at the 2007 guidelines, what we found was that those guidelines, they were not applied in a uniform way. Again, the SOCs knew that if we are to attract the best, the guidelines are constrained. In certain instances, then that forced the SOCs to go for an alternate model. And an alternate model would be they would look at the JSE listed company, for example, and benchmark themselves against the listed company. At times, SOCs will create phantom shares and unrealistic benchmarks because they're trying to address the gaps that are in the market and then forward to this trend. That in itself led to a problem for the department because the monitoring and evaluation of the guidelines became informal in the market. Because there is rather two guidelines to follow to the people. So your monitoring was what needs to happen. The guidelines did not explicitly provide for the link between the national strategic objective of the SOC and the remuneration of the executives and the in particular, it did not also provide the link between the SOC activities and the target that they had to achieve as contained in the So with all those challenges in mind, then the department decided to take a view that maybe we need to review the 2007 guidelines. In December 2010, a panel was established then by the former minister to look at the review of the current guidelines. The main aim was to bring the reform to the remuneration level. But there was also other issues that we requested the panel to take into account. We requested them to undertake a comprehensive review to test the remuneration level. So by that we wanted them not to limit the remuneration level to the SOC, but also to look at the public sector. Because in essence, and if you look at this allocated the private sector will set the benchmark. And as and when the SOC improves, they will say, this is what the market is, and therefore we have to go with the market. So what we wanted the panel to do was then to test how remuneration participants contain the guidelines with the market. Then to align the SOC activities and remuneration practices with the shareholder development objectives, because I think that's what we are going to do. If you to put to ESCOM that your main mandate is the security of supply, and to undertake massive growth projects, but at the same time not recognizing that ESCOM does not have the capability and the capacity to undertake those plans, then effectively then it means that you acknowledge the fact that ESCOM will have to go to market to solve that capability. And if the market is rising the particular trend in terms of remuneration, then you cannot expect the SOC to operate in isolation. So we wanted also consideration for market to form part of the review. Then this reform process also we wanted it to take into account one of the biggest issues that faced at the shareholder department in provision for a greater disclosure of the top executive. And not only including the topic begins, but also senior people within the health community. So in that, we had to think about the Westerns. There were four main Westerns that were established by the panel. The first one around the remuneration and benefits. And just in brief here, what we were looking at is the fact that an acknowledgement that it's human nature and good practice to use the benefits to attract and retain the best. And if you want it to become employers of choice, then aligning that principle would be the benefits that you would be able to offer appropriate competencies. Then there was also the work from our corporate governance. We believe that if SOCs are to subscribe to the philosophy of being good corporate citizens, then they will always be subjected to the same test of good corporate governance, similar and along the lines of the public. We looked at the Western for employment offer, and this also was that, and Minister has also raised that we needed to move away from traditional approaches where we manage presence. That we bring to work or we wanted to look at whether the employment contracts of our ability are aligned with it or according to the issue of managing presence and one informed ability. Then the last question of course was the stakeholderization, and this was also in recognition of the fact that SOC, they also have stakeholders, different stakeholders, and the biggest stakeholder is the public. So, what is the role of the public when they, the SOC disclose in the annual report their remuneration? Is there room for the unions to provide an opinion? What about employees who are employed by the SOC? What are their views in terms of assessment of the SOC performance of the ability to interview what they are doing here? Then one of the issues then that the panel has to do, in all of those work streams, they have to engage in consultation with the key stakeholders. And first, they have to consult the SOC themselves to understand the implementation of the system. They also have we also have them to consult with other government departments. We consult with public development, training, national training, and the Department of Public Services. And also the last consultation with the Presidential Security Committee, that of course they also have a work stream that is looking at the remuneration. All of the stakeholders that we engage, they supported the national strategy. However, the outcome of those consultations was, it shows also views that we are not aligned. We differ in terms of approach. There's also other, for example, within PRC, the work that they've done, taking into account global and international consensus. And there's also the public sector view that is held by National Trade and so the outcome really shows that the leadership set a submission on the SOC implementation. Also, the outcome was that we need alignment with various stakeholder interests. As I indicated, the employees, the labor movement. And then we needed consensus of the application of the teacher model. Because then, even if the work that we do was written by DPE, without that, you need consensus if the issue is to go back to KBS. Now, around the issue of our consensus, there were two major issues that confronted us at DPE. One of them was the applicability of the guidelines. You provide for it to apply to SOCs within DPE portfolio only, or does it become an all major public institution that will apply to all civil children? And they confronted us with a critical question for us, because the mandate that we have is the mandate of the and he felt that for us to broaden the guideline or the scope of our review, we would have to go to cabinet and to get a new mandate that applies to those other Muslim countries. So for now, the review is being forward in this country. Then in initiating the review itself, there were a number of material questions that we asked. And we looked at the minimum activities that require benchmark. And the question was, firstly, what are those minimum activities? What is the benchmark, the appropriate benchmark tool that you have to use? As I said, they are all, if you look at Kingston, it talks in detail about the discrimination. If you look at data series that require them, you talk to the issue of innovation. International companies as well as the benchmark, they do have. So we were, the panel has to confront the issue of what is the best benchmark tools to use. And given the fact that also in South Africa, the shareholder function is limited to a resources. There were other questions such as, should we consider a uniform implementation of the performance assessment of all the CEOs of the executive team? Now, this became also a challenging question in the sense that not all the SOCs are the same size. Not all of them operate the same, some within the same sector, commercial entities, some operate within a regulated environment, others not within a regulated environment. And sometimes the size is not the only thing that you can do. If you look at a small SOC such as Alex or Visa, Visa, Transnet or Tescom, the challenges that face Alex, for example, are quite massive. So if you need to do the same test, does it mean that then you will be able to satisfy both markets and you'll be able to attract the same computing skills for both SOCs? Again, we have to confront the questions around the link between remuneration and the SOC decision. And this came out in a number of reports as well, that the SOC effective, the benchmark that we as a shareholder use to inform the public the effectiveness of the SOC vis-a-vis the annual report in terms of remuneration of executives. You know, are we comparing apples and apples? And what has been used as competitive? We also confronted questions around the short term and the long term, how do you try to balance? If you attract, because also the CEO's appointments are subject to pure filing, how do you attract the best out of these people so that they are not in line by the private sector to out, because the private sector always gives better incentives on the team. Questions, a lot of questions came out of corporate governance and the effectiveness of the board and innovation committee and the influence that they have over the and there were also questions around the alignment of the board seats to the budget. To answer any questions, the panel then has to consider a lot of practical and the fundamental principles. And one of the things that came out was the fact that the DPP guidelines are followed in other instances are not followed. And this spoke to, again, the ability of the SOC to do better benchmark than the shareholder. Other SOCs will use the external benchmark and then totally disregard the guidance. As I said, they will be able to argue that if you to look at the JSC listed companies and the size of our company, it's vis-a-vis what is contained in the guidelines In some instances, the SOC would give the department approval if they are to pay outside the guidelines. In other instances, there is no. So, different policies and different benchmark exercises will be used by the SOC at all times. So, one of the observations by the panel was that then there is a need to ensure appropriate trade-off between the remuneration and the ability to affect it. And that is what the review is also looking at. Issues of succession planning and determination of appropriate levels of remuneration. Succession planning is linked to retention. If you are to train people in Canada, then you have the risk of retaining people. And that also became challenging. If somebody is retained, then there must be some kind of communication in terms of what is the future for them. And the future is not only in terms of job process, but also the benefits to them. We were reinforcing the alignment of the short-term and long-term incentives in terms of the levels, compared to the levels of the SOC's achievements. And there were also issues for recognition of SOC's public mandate, which totally did not come to hand. And again, this spoke to the benchmark. If you're going to benchmark as from MTN, MTN does not have the public mandate of the SOC, and that is not taken into account most of the time when they reach the mandate. Five sectors are driven by the bottom line, and we tend to invest and public. Entity on the one hand, shareholder is treated sometimes to forfeit the decision and to forego certain intent. So it will allow the credit money to be in the world. So if you to use purely the private sector, you will get in some problematic situations. This, having looked at all those issues, then the panel submitted its recommendations, first set of recommendations. And then it's a duty at the panel's recommendation. He said, let's take now this recommendation to cabinet as they are. Cabinet noted the report and requested the minister to engage in the conversation. And what influenced the cabinet was that out of the panel's report came further questions from cabinet. Cabinet wanted to know how are we going to balance the remuneration against the objectives and the political objectives. And one of the issues that faced us as a department in terms of looking at this issue to respond to cases is the training and the ability for SOC to plow back into the country to make sure that we have appropriate care. So what we've done is we went back to the board and looked at the issue of our contract. How do we then bring the issue of SOC's role in terms of training and provision of skills to make sure that we address the issue seriously. So then it means you always have to rely on traditional companies bringing in the expertise into the country. But then when they need to invest in provision. So this then helps to the partnership that the SOC has to go to the university and the training academies in the country to make sure that we address it. Cabinet also wanted us to address the question of how do we propose to inculcate the culture of public service obligation as opposed to the higher risk environment of the corporate-driven public sector. And what we are confronted here with is the fact that the argument is SOCs are made an extended arm of the public service. So first and foremost, they should have an acknowledgement of the fact that they are driven by the public service obligation. They have a role to play in public service obligation. This has been every time they meet themselves as part of the public sector or adopting public sector attitude. So in addressing this, we are now linking in terms of the shareholder context and the strategic intent developed by the department. SOC mandate to the public service. Also, Cabinet wanted us to address the status of the guidelines. As I said earlier on, one week to get into the DPE position. Okay, this is our plan for the DPE portfolio. The question was, then what happens to us? They overcome the consideration to expand out of the DPE. Aren't we creating or think poorly the misalignment? We are looking into this, but our challenge is again that if you look at the current legal landscape, the remuneration is the subject of negotiation between employer and employee. So, to the extent that the guidelines, the remuneration guidelines, are not affected guidelines, the truth of case, consider them. How do you ensure enforcement? The aspect of the conditions of the system in terms of the negotiation between the foreign employees. So we are looking at alignment now of the guidelines with our memorandum of incorporation, which is a new tool introduced by the Company Act to replace the substitute the articles of association. So the what provisions of this remuneration guidelines we want to see in the MOI, because the MOI is the constitution of the company and it becomes a more entrenched document than it can give it a form of a legal statement. So the company will be in the major parliament. Cabinet also wanted us to be the officials and the executive employees in the government. And those that are serving as SOC board, the question was, should you receive additional remuneration if you are employed by the SOC and serving from another board, or if you are employed by a department or state department and receive the serving on the SOC board of another department? I don't know if you additional remuneration. What are the messages of the and also here we will receive that. We always say the private sector must be able to accept. But if you're going to have somebody who sits at a board of a state-owned company and they are employed by another agency of government, then they are not to be limited. But you have somebody who sits in that board of the private sector, is being remunerated. These people, they accept the same obligation. They are exposed to the same fiduciary duties of the government. But in terms of compensation, the so this additional remuneration is not being given. So we are looking in terms of how do we then balance, and also how do you not deter the public officials from staying on board? Because to me, what is the point of me taking additional responsibility that's for not a technician? Especially if I work for a department, in my department, what I do sitting on that board is not taking into account when I'm being rewarded. And that board does not reward me. So what is the incentive for me as a public official? With the punishment of being a government official to extend themselves, but then the private sector is on the SOC that they are being paid. So again, if the elevation of if the private sector can come in, draw from the public sector, the public sector cannot keep the same. So we are looking at this in terms of the kind of risk that we need and be able to address cabinet concerns going forward. As already indicated, we are addressing cabinet concerns. And one of the approaches that we say we will adopt in the review is to retain the aspects in the new guidelines that are necessary for shareholder oversight. And those that have proven to be good parties. Because we said, if you look at the current guidelines, there has been a move that encouraged the state-owned companies to disclose more and to engage more with the shareholders. So we want to retain those practices. We want to remodel the short-term incentive to be used to perform against shareholders. for the working with the concept of the new model. We are determining the practical methodology to approach the working session. But again, as I said, in doing that, we are mindful of the fact that there's also a issue of attraction here. So, which is again the balancing act. We will establish incentives other than the assets as the revenue, and then to include developmental lending, to look at the complexities of the SOC business environment, their funding structure, and to say how do we align them without saying you know, revenue-related base or the revenue generated by the company or the asset base or the size of the SOC. We will undertake benchmark exercises to other regions. This for us is a bit of a challenge in the sense that in South Africa we don't have a shareholder, a mature developed shareholder model. And we in our consultation with the PRC this issue came up and we hope also there for we be able to assist us in terms of remodeling our guidelines. DPE is the only department that has developed and one of the challenges in the 2007 guideline was we find a situation where, for example, it should be three entities like your development corporation in what way in the Eastern Cape will adopt our guidelines. And by this, then that created a skewed remuneration for other shareholder communities. So, benchmarking exercise into other regions as well as then we're looking at addressing what is the best practice in terms of policies, as I said, the structure, which is all purely the private sector. We believe that it's too simplistic, so we need to do that in that traditional approach. And in our view, that we need to then enhance the effectiveness of our board and our board committee, so that it is not only an issue of remuneration. Once we've completed all this work, we are now in the process of packaging the outcome of our review based on the previous, what is the panel and committee, what is the cabinet and successor party. We genuinely provide amount that will assist us to package. And the reason why we don't want to do it in house anymore is that we believe that we are too close to the process. We've been through a lot of consultations and so we need an objective view, but we will be able to package all of these things together out from us and we'll be able to answer all the questions that came from cabinet and from the way they have been. So in conclusion, as I said, we are the only department that has developed the guidelines. But those guidelines, they inevitably will be subject of many challenges. And in light of the challenging market conditions as well, they will do what they will do for review. What we think needs to be acknowledged by this committee and even the public as a whole is that there is competition between the public and the private sector for competition. And that competition is not only in South Africa, all over. There is that competition and the movement of people in terms of job and better prospects, it is something that one cannot regulate fully. People will always want to move prospects. So we need to balance and even if we go towards our new guidelines, we are acknowledging that aspect. However, we say we need a new paradigm shift. As our shareholder mandate evolves in terms of managing and monitoring the state-owned companies, the state-owned companies mandate themselves as well. So we will need innovation in terms of finding better remuneration. And also, our remuneration framework should be able to provide the public with a bit of assurance with regards to its applicability and transparency. And this forces aspect, in addition to the annual disclosure in the annual report, we need to communicate more about We have learned a lot through this process in terms of reviewing the old guidelines and now taking the outcome of the new process. And what we have learned is that those an appropriate disclosure and communication cannot be substituted. And if we believe that accessing the best means of saving, we should be able to communicate better to the public. And disclose more than what is really the law. So we need to move away from legal criticism and just say the law says this is what we need to do, but we need to give more. Finally, Chair, then, this leads us to believe that we need a well put together solution before we can submit a final recommendation to the community. And our reason, once we've done this, we go to cabinet. And we hope we will cabinet and share our sentiment, and then we will be able then to share again with the community something now with the details of the model itself, how it's going to apply, what are the variables that we will take into account.
Thank you so much. The guidelines, the recommendations you talked to, these recommendations to government. What we're looking for is the remuneration report, as you put the DPE remuneration guideline approved by cabinet in 2007 with recommendations. This is what the chairperson is referring to. Because it's no use that you have a guideline for remuneration without the recommendations. Because you will run into the same trap that you tell the committee this morning. Guidelines from DPE, but it's not applied in the SOEs. So surely you will run into problems. And if they apply, they're not applied uniformly. So what the committee needs, I think, is a remuneration guideline for originally it's for the DPE. In other words, it was the 9 state-owned companies, now 8, within the DPE. If there is a new mandate or change, then I'm not informed. I don't know about it. So what we're looking for, I would think, is when do we get the DPE remuneration guidelines with recommendations to consider it? This is the bottom line. I don't see it today. So from my point of view, I have no value whatsoever to discuss this presentation before. Because problem statements, it's fine. Issues to be considered, it's fine, but it does not take us forward. I'm sorry to be asked, but the main task of our committee is to oversee cabinet or the executive and to oversee the Department of Public Enterprise. And if we don't have sufficient information to oversee these two entities, then we cannot perform our job. And I cannot perform my job this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start to say remuneration is not based in certain things with comparisons between the private sector and the state-owned companies. The baseline line we actually start with is very difficult because it's very difficult to make a comparison between the two. Because in the case of the private sector, the investors, the stakeholders, they've got shares and they expect dividends and profits. In the case of the state, the actual shareholders is actually the taxpayer through the state. That's actually how it works. But before I go further on with CR, I first want to make a point about board members. Board members normally are remuneration is linked to attending board meetings. Because you are appointed and you accept the appointment, or you elected and you accept the election to serve on the board to make a contribution for that company. So if you're not attending the board meeting, you can't be remunerated. So it must be linked to if you're present at the board meeting, then you can get your allowance for that board meeting. If you're not present, you can't get it. Because what happened in this country is a lot of people now serve like on 15 or 17 different boards. And they just put in a, you know, putting in for not attending, apologies for not attending, and they still expected to be receiving the remuneration for that board meeting, which they did not attend. The further problem we're running into, as you actually asked to make a difference now between officials and executives employed with the government and serving on SOC boards. I can give you an example now. The Premier of the Northern Cape can appoint 2 people serving on, for example, and my colleague down the line would know it, on the Nakamafluan Diamond Trust Fund. She can appoint 2 people. The remuneration for the board members is like 3,000 rand attending a full day of the board sitting. Now come the question. I ask it at the portfolio committee. Tell me, did you put in leave because you're full-time employed and the Premier appointed you to sit there? So you're employed by the Premier as official to go and sit on the board and represent the Northern Cape now. So did you put in leave? Because if you didn't put in leave, you can't expect a double pay. So put in what's coming out, I didn't put in leave, but I will in future. Why? Because the fee is 3,000 rand for the day. So you wouldn't actually be remunerated in a position as an official 3,000 rand a day. So what's happening now? Now, officials start running up and stuff up to people that is in higher positions to be appointed on behalf of the state to serve on boards to get extra money, because it's always about extra money. It didn't end there, because we've got all the reports. Now they form subsidiary portfolio meetings for that from the board, a finance committee and corporate government committee, and they remunerated additional 2,000 rand for each portfolio board sub-board committee they actually now is serving on. That's a fact. And that's a good. And the other thing is, if it's been stipulated that the board meeting should be 6 times a year, every second month, the other way they do then quickly, change the rules, they want now on a monthly basis, because then there's more money involved for them. So that is a very big issue. And in the most cases, if a person that's employed by the state is appointed on the board, there is always either a direct or an indirect conflict of interest. You can always go back. There's one way or other way there would be a conflict of interest. Coming back now to the CEO. A CEO is actually appointed to do one thing. He must achieve a certain outcome. In most cases, the outcome would be profit. But otherwise, why would you be appointed at that high salary level? You must achieve certain goals. And I would say in 100% cases, its achievement is to run well the company and to achieve a certain point, and that will be profit. Now the question is, in the private sector, it's always linked to a performance contract. If you didn't, for example, achieve 80% of your goals, 80% is top, you don't receive any form of performance remuneration. If you did achieve above 80%, there's also some scales that say if you achieve 80%, you get, for example, as a example, you could receive an 80% bonus. If you achieve 85%, that is fine. But under 18, no bonus. That's a cut-off point. Now that's in private sector. That's mostly run like that way. And if you don't perform, the board will just take a decision and say, I'll give you another 12 months, otherwise you're out of the CEO position. What happened in the civil service is, if you don't perform, you explain why, what was all the things, the influence from outside and inside the company, why you didn't perform. I'm not going to give an example, but it's now hypothetical. If the CEO of, for example, Eskom didn't make long-term planning, because that's one of his must-do short-term, medium, and long-term plan in his company. He's responsible together with his board for that. Long-term planning for South Africa in the sense of capital reserve fund to upgrade all capital projects in South Africa as far as the network contribution, network, and all the networks in South Africa. That's why we're ending up now with an increase in tariffs for 3 years above 20%. This year, only by the intervention of the president, it's now on 16%. But why did that happen? Come back to the board members and come back to the CEO. So, if that didn't happen, why we must pay them a bonus? You can't pay them a bonus because they didn't succeed in the goal that they should have done. So it's actually linked to our outcome. If there's no outcome that can measure the achievement, no bonus, at the end of the day, what happens in South Africa, if a person is appointed a 5-year contract in a company that we actually is in charge of, if you don't perform, then at the end of the day, the board makes a decision, he must be let go, or she must let go, and then appoint another person. And then, he or she is even paid a golden handshake for non-performance, but just to be the person out of office. It's not fun. Because we're working with taxpayers' money, and we're sitting down this long, but the other side to see that it's been well spent in the whole of South Africa. So, in short, if the person that is CEO lives up to the expectations of contributions and his knowledge, fine. We can pay him a well-paid salary. But then we must measure the outcome. And the outcome must be the goal that's been set in stone beforehand. And we must be blunt. No achievement, you're out of office. But I don't want to go in now the whole thing, because the chairman already said I'm a long one now, in the sense of the levels of... Because, you know, you can't compare the CEO of, as you said, MTN or Vodacom, or even Absa Bank, with the CEO of Eskom. I'll leave it at that.
in this whole, firstly, I'd like to agree with Honourable Kuhn 100%. In actual fact, one of my last points was certainly we need a time frame so that we know when exactly we will reach conclusion on this matter. Because the way even this presentation has been given to us, there is no cut-off date as to when a final remuneration document will be delivered to Cabinet. You know, there's no cut-off period. In other words, when this will reach its logical conclusion, we don't know. So this could literally go on for another 3 or 4 years. And in that 3 or 4 year time span, people are going to be earning outrageous bonuses and perhaps excess remuneration packages. So we need to know from you, what is your envisaged cut-off point for this document? Chairperson, and then also on the background and problem statements number 3 on page 5, one of the 4 work streams that were established were employment contracts. Now, I don't think that we can underestimate the importance of the correct employment contracts being given out as well. And I say this because we're not just managing presence, as we've said before, because it's easy to be present at a meeting, but not to be present, if you know what I mean. What we're looking for is performance and merit-driven indicators in our employment contracts. Then one of the key issues, there was actually a link between remuneration and SOT effectiveness. Now, certainly we must also not only look at remuneration, but look at remuneration in terms of terms within the employment contract. Because what we see often is we see SOEs dodging the bullet, so to speak, and finding loopholes with regards to remuneration when it comes to employment contracts. Because the employment contract and the remuneration packages don't always meet up. So we definitely need to look at the way we term and the way we draft our employment contract. In terms of stakeholder agreement, as you mentioned, we look at the public because the public are stakeholders. We look at unions, we look at employees because, of course, it's terribly disheartening if you're an employee in a company and you know your company isn't doing well. And you get told that you are going to get an increase that's below inflation, you know, below inflation targeted remuneration, but then your superiors are getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 million rand bonuses at the end of the year. You lose your employees lose incentive to work harder. What I'd like to know is, have people like the public protector and the auditor general been consulted in your investigations and in your looking at the way remuneration packages should be granted? Because at the end of the day, these are the people that will come to Parliament and come to us as members of Parliament when we do our oversight role and tell us that there are problems. Chair, then just quickly on the key issues considered on page 8, number 2. The statements are made, other SOEs use external benchmarks and totally disregard DPE guidelines. In some instances, approval of DPE is sought and in others not. And the third point is, in some instances, SOP adopt DPE guidelines, in others, a different policy altogether. Now, this is unacceptable. I think let's just use the word. What kind of action, if any, will ever be taken against departments that behave in this manner? Because I think it's a general feeling in South Africa that, they've been caught out, but so what? Nothing will ever happen to them. The problem is we have a lack of accountability across all spheres of government and across all spheres of SOCs. And I'd like to know, when someone is completely disregarding guidelines that are already set for them, what kind of action, if any, is going to be taken against them? And, Chairperson, my last point, I have many points, but I realise that a lot of us want to talk. As a point is made on the key issues that were considered, officials and executives employed in government and serving on SOC boards, should they receive additional remuneration? And this links in closely with what Honourable Marie mentioned. It is beyond my logical understanding why this would even be considered. Because to me it makes no sense at all. And shall I leave it at that?
Thank you, Chairman. I think I'll just interested in some members. The presentation is work in progress, which gives the committee a program to engage with it.
your problem is it? The problem of the shareholder, the problem of the SO,
company.
SOE.
Socks, just the socks.
And really, really, I find it very, very difficult to interact with the presentation. As other members have asked, one wonders how long will this be? Because one would have envisaged a process of this nature to have taken place long time ago. Now the only question I have is, on the basis of all the interactions and consultations, what yardstick are we applying? Or what yardstick are those that are involved in these negotiations, consultations, and whatever? Are they applied in so far as the state of the country is concerned? I am talking in terms of, are we using a yardstick of developed countries in a developing country? Because it seems as if the way our executives are remunerated, it seems as if we take South Africa as a developed country. Yet, South Africa is far from being developed. If you look at situations where there are families that live without food a week. The second one would be, when we look at the remuneration model, yes, I understand that you are saying that we need to attract and retain critical and scarce skills. It hits back into, what country are we? Are we a developed country? Are we a developing country? Are we a, what is the other one? A third world country. Yes. Now, are we thinking of ethical leadership in the SOCs versus the, one would say, versus the requisite compensation for the executives in the process? I'm asking these questions knowing that the presentation is work in progress. It could be, these questions could be replied on, and they could not be replied on as we speak, because cabinet is seized in the matter. Thank you,
sir. It's your question. Yeah. I would not like to second my case, but I would like to take a different take. to this presentation. You see, there's a history behind this, which has been eloquently stated by Elias Peters. But we must not be oblivious of the fact that the current management is only about 15, 18 months in office. Minister of New, Digital Minister, Minister of New, etc., etc. Now, they should not suffer the sins of their predecessors. As I used to state that public enterprises are like high pressure, operating like a high pressure hose pipe. In the past, some of us have been working like that. You want to be like a high pressure hose pipe. Now, there is not a positive attempt to actually most important map for medicine doesn't really stand to be the actual map for medicine, which you appreciate. Now, a few points. Number one, this document might be viewed as work in progress of the COVID state. I want to associate myself with these sentiments. Number two, desirable as it may be to the country, these are all you sort of people sort of people don't know the act, impossible in the cost. You will have to, this document will have to be linked to the program of the, not only of the PRC, but of the MPC itself, the National Planning Committee, so that your strategy, your investment strategy, should not be in the vacuum. It must be situated in the context of the National Planning Commission, as well as the desire of the Commission. That's what it should be. Because if you plan tangentially, you come up with impressive figures and exciting guidelines, but they are out of context of these two pillars, the MPC and the PRC, to be meaningless. You just did it just impressive. So that is why I say that now we should not actually be too hard on you. We should actually treat this document as a site and as a sensitization document. That's all. The document is to sensitize as parliamentarians access oversight so that the final product should be able to carry it. It shouldn't just be a rushed document which is a prohibited outlook but which should not have validity. Then a few quick 4 points. On the next one, what my colleague Mr. Media on also said, that it should be a feature of developmentalism built into it. I'll tell you why this is important. It's important because you see, if you the people that you employ, you want the pressure of the remuneration that you don't get in ordinary, simply because they're chasing high returns, which are very desirable, but they're based on contract, 3-year contract, 5-year contract. There's no career path in there. There should be career path in military and also a developmental approach. So then, career pathing and developmentalism, those will cushion you against the pressure to remunerate in ordinary. Because at the end of the choice, do I want to stay here as a home here, with a future here, or do I want to make a quick buck and loot, including clear that, then I'm out in the field now looking for other jobs. So, the features must avoid is lack of certainty in employment and in ultimate incentivization and a revolving door where a person works here, signs a contract to work here for 3 years, but then every day, for the first time he comes to office, every day he gets to office, they look. We read the newspaper on the website to find out what other agencies are there. You see? And then they can blackmail you now and say, look, I know I signed this contract here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but look at that offer. They lobby. Even the ones that are there, half the time they're busy lobbying to try and get themselves placed elsewhere. So my very least a revolving door syndrome. That is why we're trying to get in. State-owned companies, because people are free, move around, and they can be clean. So you must close all those loopholes. So the point we're trying to make here is that have a strategic, but treated as a strategic document, especially that it is innovative, sort of its kind, because it has not happened elsewhere in other departments. So it must be used as a model, but in other words, it must be. An unassailable model, it must be buttressed by the strategy of the National Planning Commission as well as the Presidential Review Committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank the presentation by the department. I think I'm going to also sing the same song. Just to get to the questions that were asked.
Will you go back
before
that one?
I think any committee will really want to know, because of our past experience of following the investors into a company employed by a local business left with a huge amount of money. The second question would be on the what are you doing to address it? I don't know what the right should I have, so what are you doing? I know this is a working problem. I just want to check for those conservatives who are in Toronto, especially because of the involvement in corruption, criminal activities and all that. And in this ability to find that the people getting money while they are put on special needs. In your what you call in your work, absolutely. In your work, are you also looking into that? Because I think it needs to come to a stop. Enough is enough. You cannot expect busy paying somebody who's sitting at home, who's being investigated for corruption and such cases. Maybe the third one would be on the executives who find themselves having many, many faults. What is it that are you looking also into that? Because you find yourself having 50 faults, and that second obviously is not going to attend to all the faults. So he's deploying money there, which is wrong. You need to rectify that. Okay, the last one, Chair, is going to be on the those executives who are getting the bonuses and benefits while the company that they're working for actually are losing a lot of money. And those executives have to be paid those money and all that. Is that going to continue or is it going to come to a stop? Thank you very much.
People don't find themselves having money, but they want to pay.
Yeah.
I think time out is a lot. Sorry about that.
I welcome the question. It's also understand that you need to do the same thing that you can share with the corporate environment. But maybe here one needs to say the process that we embark on is not an easy one. All the consultations that you need engaged in, whether it's ministries, in government, in the CSC, all other people, they leave us with a lot of questions. I have been in a consultation office. I wish I could go into a consultation and walk away with something. Everyone puts questions to us, and we are expected to come up with something. So it is not an easy process, and I hope to hold on to that. In terms of timing, in terms of the presentation, we deliberately did not put that. The reason being, we believe there's still a lot that we need to do, and we can't confirm where we'll be. We are waiting our own timeline to say, if this is by the end of the financial year, we have a model that has been at least endorsed by cabinet to go and test. Because only once the cabinet agrees on the framework that we want to put it, then we will develop the guidelines and stuff. So currently what we see is we're looking at the multipliers, the variables that we put to cabinet and say to them, if you adopt this as a principle, not a guideline, as a principle, then we'll go and develop the guidelines. what we have done is that it is only the moratorium that is to be able to do the But other than doing the basics of the guidelines in the program, going forward, we eventually want to put it in the Ramahandana Corporation. Because then that becomes the bigger version of all the in the program, which then we can be able to include some punitive measures to the SSC if they don't have to. So we need the guidelines. But if they have to choose the labor relations head to the case of medical company, they'll comply with the law. This is the guidelines. So we'll be waiting on them. The new model going forward will be included in the face of the guidelines. Now, interesting question is on how to think around are we a developed or developing country? And I think what the department has done for the minister has been to articulate clearly what we believe as BPE, our shareholder function, should be. And he's been putting it all around the issue of development and balancing and bringing the SOC closer to that development state in terms of their activities and how do they contribute to that development state. So that's how we see. Now, on our government's scope of the transition 2007 to 2010, the panel and now and what has happened, there's been a lot of work that has been happening. And again, like before, we have a new vision. When Minister Gigaba joined, he gave us a new vision for the government, aligned to the development state. And then we have to go back to the drawing board and say, whatever instruments that we are using to monitor the SOC must be aligned to that vision and to the movement. So again, as I said, our function is evolving, not just the SOC. So there's always changes that we need to take into account. And these are the changes that we have to take a bit of a longer period to conclude our process of the guidelines. The career passing in the development in terms of succession plan, yes, you have to create, as I said, if we want SOC to become employer for choice, they also have to create that facility. They need to be able to create the degree and create a platform where to feel that they can be employed and they can see the future in the company. Now, you cannot decide those outside of the remuneration, the pattern that, and the trend that the SOC is. Because as in the presentation, we spoke about alignment of the SOC objectives, their effectiveness, their performance in terms of the context, and the ability to achieve. So all of these are components that we need. But we cannot just take one at the isolation of the other. So in the new guidelines going forward, we need to be throwing those of all those. And at some point, say, if you need to do the scale, which one weighs higher? And at what point do you discriminate one against the other? And as I said, it is something that we need to look into the new when developing the new guidelines. Executives that are being put on special leave, and whether the guidelines will address it. As I said, currently, and it was also in the presentation, that the current legal landscape, you have the Labor Relations Act that deals with all employment relations issues. So, all the various people, when they are employed on the basis of the Labor Relations Act. Then the company has their own policies. So, the guidelines will operate within the footprint of the law, cannot explain the law. So we believe that and foremost that SOCs, when they see their benefits of special needs, they should take into account the provisions in the act, their own employment policy aligned with the law. What we are doing with the guidelines is to say how do we monitor and also how do we influence the manner in which the remuneration are just not within the country. There is something that is important. The issue of the multiple board is something that exists in the current guidelines started off, but the new guidelines will be more detailed around it. As a matter of fact, it is an issue that we use now when we appoint the board members. The recommendation that we put to the minister that the multiple board is one of them that we look into. Because not only are you looking at somebody who sits at many boards, but also you need to address the issues of conflict of interest, issues of the declarations So yes, and actually we do put it in our memorandum of incorporation for companies as well. The payments came to the executive while the company was not performing very well. Again, we spoke about it in the presentation. FOC equipment and the financial sustainability determination. This is really one of the areas that we are contributing to the new guidelines. The change of point around the whole issue of the generation info in our process as well. It is true, and then even in consultation with the other department, the issue came up to say, so we extend the consultation wider to other government departments that also have the issue of data function. And it is part of the process of the engagement.
The
issue of the foreign migration, again, I think the executives, when they are employed, they would be employed on the basis of the laws of the country. And they adhere to rules in terms of expatriation. So this effort to employ a foreign migration, it must be subject to the current laws of South Africa in terms of employment. So it is aligned to the employment. I don't think there is encouragement that there will be a relative that can be paid higher than the normal just because they it will be an issue really of the team if you are trying to the negotiations and but the principle is everything must be paid fully.
On an English, I say, yeah, you need it. No one can do that.
Can we have the 5 minutes for the next 5 minutes? That's the current one. So you'll see how you share the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
1 minute. So give me two questions. In a sense, we're taking a portfolio focus here. What does National Treasury say? I want to know what is the view of Treasury. Because if it goes to the message for everyone, here we talk of portfolio focus. So I need to know whether Treasury is on board with this one. And secondly, in the last couple of years, we've seen so many acting CEOs and board chairpersons and so on. What do we do with acting directors? Do they get allowances?
Acting
allowances.
Acting allowances.
Yeah. Acting allowances. I think that's 1.5 minutes. I was telling you today, one day Mark and I was in my team, in the case of employees, there's a rule and you can stipulate it. You've got like 30 days sick leave over 3 years period. If you go over 30 days sick leave, you don't get paid anymore. Now when I get the example of the board member, and I've seen it in the reports, we went to 4 board meetings a year, 1 attendance. So I'll just give the example. So the rule should be actually, if you're not attending 2/3 of the board meetings per year, you out automatically. Don't go through a process of first take it now to the board, then lobbying with the other board members. Oh, I can't go up to the city, I can vote against it. The rule must be stipulated, I think in this case, I can give you an example with employees. Over 30 days sick leave, no pay. And acting is a serious problem in South Africa. I can give you an example in municipalities. People are directors, you get the municipal manager, the directors, and the chiefs, and the managers. We come to a point in South Africa where the managers is acting in the position above and the directors in the union's place, municipal manager. They don't qualify when that position is exercised. They don't qualify to apply for the position. But when they get there in that position, because I'm a friend or I lobbied to get in that position for 3 months, 6 months, and they actually just renew it.
And eventually, they managed in the system not to get the position advertised. So I'm actually employed indirectly as a director of a municipality, but I don't qualify for that position, but I get the remuneration of that. But luckily, they now stopped to do that because the local minister must actually now approve if there's an extension gift after 3 or 6 months for a person acting in an appointment on the level of musical manager or directors on that level. So that's why I say spell out the rules, very easy. If you don't attend 2/3 of the meetings of the year, you're automatically out. You don't have to go to another decision body because directors themselves will write the rules to benefit themselves. So if I stipulate in the rules and it must come back to me if to actually expel a person, I will just go around and rewrite the rules. So spell out the rules. It's easy, like in the case of employees with CV.
Just two quick ones. The first one, much as you just pointed, we are involved in Down syndrome, the questionnaire. Number two, the outstanding vacancies that have not been filled in. I know the Department of Human Development, for example, are in the last week as many as they could. But that's something to comment on.
This our guidelines specify 50%
board attendance other than that you are out. Now there has been where we've raised it and people have raised it to be checked to the board in attendance of the board members. And hence the review of this issue is allowed to be on board.
Thank you.
Then voting though, quality, I think it's a bigger problem, not really bigger than DPE to say. Again, it is linked to all these issues of career development, succession planning, progression. It is a very difficult one to regulate. You are limited really in terms of how you can and why you would stop people from moving. I think what we have acknowledged is at the senior level and even at the department in terms of the questions that have been posed to us in terms of somebody that has worked for a department and then leave and go and work for the own company for the senior position and all of that. But I think it is a bigger problem. And in consultation with the DPSA, it also came up in terms of how do we also move, how do we keep schemes in the public sector. Somebody's in DPE for them to go to an SOC and do the trial, and how do you manage it? So, I'm going to give you something that came to
mind. Senator Charles, the significance of my question is, even when they sign the contract, the ministry, how is all that happened?
Yeah, as I said, it's a principle that it's a regulator in terms of the employee-employer relationship. Somebody's contracted, they can resign. But also, what in senior positions, what we've done is that there are a trade provision that you put in. But it is not a matter that you can really regulate in a sense of prohibiting people from moving. But you can put provisions like the restraint of provision clauses, depending where they are going, they're going to a competitor and all this. But you can't really regulate it.
Honourable Nana. I'm sorry for not being late, and I have to make several excuses.
No.
I don't have to make my problems with problems. Chair,
you would normally say that's not a problem.
I'm saying my problem, core problems. Chair, please don't hesitate to run out of order if my colleagues have touched on the issue. Chair, it is an issue that I've been asking even in defense and in other committees that are sitting. It just can't stop boggling my mind. I'll make an example, Chair. Previously, of course, under the executive president at the time, I worked in a municipality. And we would be given something called performance bonus. It was good to receive it because I was in the receiving end. But I kept on asking myself, is it really worth it? Because my understanding, Chair, is that I got paid X amount of money for doing my job. If I was doing my job or I wasn't doing it, it's something that's altogether. But the fact of the matter is that I had key performance indicators, I had a job description, and I got paid for it. And now, at the end of the year, I would be given something called performance bonus. And I think it's something that is done with the SOEs as well. And my question has always been, and it remains, that why should executives of SOEs given performance bonuses for something that are paid to do on a monthly basis? My view, Chair, is that a performance bonus cannot be based on KPIs that a person has achieved, because he or she is getting paid for those KPIs in any case on a monthly basis. A person can only be paid a performance bonus if he or she has gone beyond the call of duty, if he or she has done beyond what is contained in his fire contract as it relates to KPIs and job description. And my question really, Chair, is why do we pay the performance bonuses, which in most cases double or triple the actual salary of the individual concerned? Thank you.
Question was a different
question.
Oh.
Yeah. You said that first and foremost, I think performance bonuses are not by themselves a good idea. If you want to have employees, as you said, the honorable member says, encourage them to go beyond, then you need something. So, as a principle, they are not a bad thing. The problem becomes when they are not properly stipulated, say, under what circumstances does this now become a performance. And as we said, we found that the alignment with the conflict has been a weakness. So, your KPIs and your KPIs, they must be clear that this what the expectation of the shareholder to be met. You below that, then you don't get a bonus. You've already been paid, you've done the bare minimum, the average. But you go beyond this success. So the problem has been the implementation, the monitoring, and really the insistence on managing those levels that will take us to say this is now outside of the normal workspace, then you are entitled. And as I said in the presentation, those are the things that we're looking into now. For example, if you're going to be doing a shareholder contract for ESCOM, we've gone beyond the stage where security of supply, where the contract will say showing security of supply, that's just a KPI.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be beyond now and put other measures in there. So we do take the point, but also at the same time, we are mindful that effect of the method is bonuses are an form of an encouragement for individuals to go beyond average.
Yeah, I think the problem is it seems that in the contract it just says you'll get a bonus. So it doesn't under what circumstances you get a bonus. And we call it the performance. It just if it's performance bonus, then it doesn't mean that if you performed exceptionally, you know, good.
Okay.
Yeah, you should have performed. Even when there's a loss on the bonus, you will still get it.
Mm.
Yes. Even if the company is going down, that this person is really just messing up, you still, you know, for the mess that they created, give them a bonus. Yeah, so I think that's something very serious, and you know, it actually encourages people to do wrong. Yeah. And it doesn't incentivize. Instead, it has the opposite. I know I get it. Yeah. You know, someone spoke about God. It's true that people who see the 70. If you just think of 70 boss, so where are these school boss, and but there are a number of boss, I mean there are three committees as well, boss. You know, when I was given the responsibility to chair this, you see the number of people who phoned and asked if I can't help to get the one just for that. And and it's not just sitting on the board. So there are these subcommittees, as I said. But now the subcommittees even go further and establish task lists. And what we do, so the board will meet four times in a year. But if you look at the actual calendar of the members who sit on this board, it even exceeds the number of days in a year. Because the subcommittee will then have its own meetings, agree in those meetings and how often they will be meeting. And then the task team will also have its own number of meetings. And so you are a CEO of a company, which just your board meeting give you almost twice what you and a CEO. So that's why this is really something that needs to be very, very different and calculated very, very rigorously. It's something that is being abused, you know, very, very, very much. I mean, you can imagine if someone sits on 74, what are they doing? When? And you feel, you know, with so much pride, you know, they are service to the community, to this and that. Yeah. It's true. Someone can't be appointed by the premier or the mayor or whoever to go and represent the council. And the day you take off from council, you are paid for that day to attend the meeting. And then you still get back. And when you get to the meeting, being a representative of the council, you then still sit on the task team and the subcommittee and you know, all this stuff. So if you look at it, the mayor knows that you are attending one meeting every month. So you are actually attending 15 meetings in a month. Anyway, Matthias, thank you so much. I know it wasn't an easy one. But I think we have to understand that this is work in progress, which I don't know about it. But it is very important for us to, you know, be part of this process, to know and to give our own input to ensure that, you know, at the end of the day, we come up with something that addresses the concerns that we have as a team based by the MLA. Thank you very much, and thank you also to you. I think this brings us to the end of this part of the meeting. We have two sets of minutes that we should have to consider. If you, like the end of the team, you're free to if you want to say. There are no differences in the minutes. There are minutes of the 6th of March and the 13th of March. Any comments on the minutes?
Chairperson, I'd just like to thank the Secretariat, especially the fact I see that the suggestion to put members who are absent from our college has been included in the minutes. Thank you very much.
And is that open movement for the
motion
of the minutes? Any second? Honorable Lennon, thank you so much. You look after. I'll put before you the minutes of the 13th of March. Any comment? Any move up for adoption of this? Honorable Mare moves. Honorable Foreman second. Thank you so much. I think this ends to the end. Honourable members, thank you so much for attending the meeting and for the input. The meeting is adjourned.